Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 45. Our guests are Jake Hicks and Nefi Lopez of The Law of Esports. In this podcast, we discuss the evolution of how the guys got into gaming, the reason why they decided to start their podcast, and how they plan to help their listeners succeed in the esports industry. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox back with another EBN podcast. And today's guests are Jake Hicks and Nefi Lopez of The Law of Esports. They have a podcast. They have built up on YouTube and on the podcast networks. And I just wanted to invite them to come onto the show and talk about what they're doing and what they are bringing to the esports industry. So welcome to the show, Jake and Nefi.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it. It's glad to be here.
Awesome. You know, I was been watching your stuff for about 2 weeks now, and there really isn't another podcast out there. Of course, I've personally worked with Justin Jacobson before, and I know there's also the esports lawyer, but I've never seen a combo or a duo that's, you know, bouncing topics off of each other. But before we, you know, dive right into the law of esports and what you guys are building, what has been the history behind how you got to where you're at now? What kind of gaming experience did you have? I know Jake has sort of a traditional sports background as well. And Nefi, you have a long history as in the space of law. I haven't got to know you as much digitally, yeah. But we're getting connected. Yeah. So, yeah, let's hear about your stories. What brought you here?
I'll start. So I've always been a big gamer growing up. My dad had Ataris. He had, you know, we had the Nintendo Family Entertainment System, you know, the original Nintendo. Always been a big fan of video games, but I started playing football when I was about 5 years old, and that kind of took over, and video games just kind of a fun escape every now and then. And then in high school, in the early 2000s, there was that MTV Real Life documentary series. And one of the episodes, I was probably like 10 or 11 when I saw it, was I'm a professional gamer. And it was like MTV True Life, I'm a professional gamer. And it showed Fatality and his Quake run when he was running through everyone in the competitive Quake scene. And I watched that and I was like, dang, you can be a professional gamer? That's awesome. And so, you know, it was hard to find professional gamers at the time because there was no real streaming capability, particularly if you lived where I lived in Montgomery, Texas, and had the worst internet in the world. There was no shot. So, I still kind of played video games here and there. Did some LAN tournaments for Halo, did some Counter-Strike 1.6 tournaments back in the day at these little LAN places. There was a place called Combat Zone where you could go pay like 10 bucks for the day. They'd give you a computer, you just play, whatever. And then I ended up getting a scholarship to play football in college at Rice University. Loved it. Football is absolutely my passion. Graduated, got signed as an undrafted free agent into the NFL, and got cut pretty early. And then I was in this series of being cut, getting signed, getting cut, playing in different leagues. And I ended up actually playing a lot of Call of Duty Black Ops 2. And that's kind of when I started getting into who's really good. And I started playing game battles, some S&D.
Let me interrupt real quick, just for all the listeners. Jake is a massive human being. I mean, like 6'5". How tall are you? Six five.
About 6'5". I was about 3'10" at the time.
He was getting cut not because he wasn't good, because Jake was really good. We've known each other for a while. But because they were saying he wasn't big enough, and he is literally, I think he was like J.J. Watt's body double. I mean, JJ.
That's a whole other story.
Oh, Jake God. Is a massive human being. They're saying he wasn't big enough. But anyways, so the listeners don't think that he's not good at football. Jake is a beast, but he played offensive line at the time, and they wanted monsters. And Jake was a monster, but apparently he wasn't big enough for the NFL. But anyway, sorry.
I was offensive lineman, and I was super dedicated, so I wasn't really partying. I wasn't going out. I wasn't drinking the whole time I was trying to make a run at the NFL. Yeah. So I was gaming, right? If I wasn't with a team, I would work out, then I would play, you know, Black Ops 2, whatever. And I got really into it because it wasn't just like when I was playing Modern Warfare or whatever and like COD 4, I would just play it with my buddies. You know, I got really into it, started getting competitive. And that's also when Optic started their team house in the 6050 house, started blowing up on YouTube and started really making waves. Justin TV started to get popular. MLG TV started to come up. And I was like, okay, I think there's something here with esports. So I just followed it from there on out. Went to law school, ended up leaving football, went to law school, got into the law firm that I'm at now called Foley and Lardner. And they have a big sports industry group. One of the attorneys is a guy named Bobby Sharma, who's a former NBA guy. And he was one of the original team members for MLG. And so now he's a consultant with Foley and Lardner, not a consultant. He's of counsel, Foley and Lardner in the New York office. And I was like, hey, there's an opportunity to kind of make some waves here with esports. And that's how I got connected with Neffy in law school, and we started playing a bunch of Call of Duty together. And that's how I kind of got to where I am right now. And Neffy has a much more comprehensive gaming background than I do, but I've always just been a fan. I thought it was cool that there are professionals in it. And I think it's truly a professional arena. You know, guys work hard, you compete. That competitive nature is tenacious, and it always has to be there to succeed. And I always thought that was awesome. So
yeah. And so one of the common themes, and I'm sure you've noticed, Trent, is video games seems to be an escape for a lot of people. Whenever people really get deep into gaming, is because they're trying to escape, whether it's a professional life, their private life. And so very similar, like Jake, my escape was a little different. I kind of grew up in the hood here in Houston, and I've always been a little bit of a geek nerd. I enjoyed school. The kids I hung out with were not the cool kids, and quite the opposite. We kind of bonded over playing video games. And so, you know, when the kids on the weekends, and when I say kids, I mean literally sixth graders, eighth graders. I mean, you'd be surprised at what some of these kids are up to at you know, 13, 14 years old. You know, whenever they say hood rat things, I mean, literally these kids are out there, you know, dealing drugs up to no good. And instead of doing that, I, you know, stayed home and played video games. And, you know, one of my original, I've been in gaming since, I remember my parents, whenever I was young, they used to buy these pallets. They would buy pallets with all types of random crap inside of them. And I remember on one of the, and you would buy, you would not know what's in them, but inside of it, they had a Sega Dreamcast inside one of these pallets that they bought. I guess, I don't know if this was around the time when Sega was kind of going downhill and they were literally liquidating them. So I got one in a pallet and started playing that, some Nintendo 64, the original Nintendo before then. The Game Boy, I'm still a big Pokemon fan. But where I really got into competitive gaming was right around when Xbox launched and the Halo title started coming out. And that's one of the first really competitive games I got into. I mean, I would always have to go to my friend's house because, you know, I didn't have Xbox Live. We barely had internet, and it was kind of hard. So there was this kid that would always invite me over, and you know, I had my Xbox Live profile with him. And that's really where I first got into it. But where I really got into, I guess what you could say borderline professional gaming, was whenever Gears of War came out. And back then it was game battles, and we used to compete on there. And right around, I want to say 2006, 2007, my family, because my dad worked in construction, we actually had to move with this company that switched headquarters over in Las Vegas. And so in Las Vegas was sort of a hub for a lot of gaming tournaments back in the day, along with, you know, LA. I mean, it was 6-5 hours away. And like Jake, once I was also really into football. I played high school football. I ended up playing football in college. Unlike Jake, I'm not a massive human being, so I didn't get any offers to play professional sports. And so when I wasn't playing football or I wasn't working, I was playing video games. But Gears of War was really I mean, it was, I'd say if I had really stuck with it, which is one of the biggest regrets, which is why I've been so passionate about gaming, is that, you know, and I'm sure, you know, whenever you come from a minority background, your parents always want a better life for you. And they were like, focus in school. I was good at football. So they said, focus on football. And so I kind of, you know, I remember back in YouTube, I mean, literally 10, 12 years ago, I started posting, you know, clips of me working kids on Gears of War. Back then my name was like Gears Guy or something like that. I think the channel got deleted a long time ago because I stopped uploading literally like 11 or 12 years ago. But look, I feel like if I had stuck with it, I would potentially be one of those guys that are streaming. And so I was like, well, how can I get back into it now? With my love for gaming, and my love is, especially for Gears of War, is kind of what nurtured it. Cause I got in contact with a lot of other really good players. Some of the guys that I regularly play with were guys that are ranked number one, number two in the world. For Gears of War, you know, and I'm Mexican, so a lot of the guys that I play with, you know, Mexico Gears of War is massive, and that was really my first sort of got my feet wet with professional gaming, and I didn't take off because I ultimately ended up prioritizing college over it. And then same thing with Call of Duty all through law school. That's kind of how Jake and I bonded. We both were really into a Call of Duty, and we're competitive, and I like to play. I occasionally like to stream whenever I play, but it's really hard to kind of dedicate as much time as some of these full-time gamers do into the games, to where I wish I could, you know, game as much as they can. But, you know, we've got full-time jobs. There's people that depend on us to handle their issues, right? Because that's what we do. We have problems. People come to us with problems, and we help them solve those problems. That's what we do. And we do that in a variety of ways.
Yeah, Nephi and I actually had a very, very short-lived, if it was lived at all, 2v2 S&D run on Modern Warfare.
Yeah,
we did battles.
as much as we wanted to, our schedule simply did not allow it. And then, you know, COVID hit, and you would think that working from home, you kind of have more time to do it, but you're always working. If you're home, there isn't a clear, like, I'm working here, now I'm home. It's always, we're working. And so, you know, during that time, Jake and I would always play. And because we work so much, we literally wouldn't get on until like 11 or 12 or midnight, and then play till like 3 a.m. and then have to suffer the consequences of playing games all night.
And then we wouldn't play for like 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, you know, there was like a new hop up. Or a new patch, or double slide cancel bunny hop thing that we were trying to figure out, and it was just
and it's crazy because we'll get back on it, we'll learn the meta, and we'll do solid, and then, you know, like I had a jury trial like, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I didn't play at all for like 2 weeks, and then we get back on it, and I mean the game completely evolves during that time, so it's really hard to kind of stay on it. But
By the way, if I could just shout out J God on YouTube for keeping us updated on the meta, for all of us that can't just play 24/7. Oh my God, dude.
Yeah.
What a glorious resource that's been for all of Warzone and Cold War and everything, man.
It's funny how much we depend on that guy too. Like, yeah, dude. Video. What gun should we be using? I don't know. Let's find out on YouTube.
Yeah, man.
Cause we're competitive in every way.
Wow, where do we go from here? Where do we start? We've already got a million topics to talk about. So obviously we need to, you know, cater this to the audience who are actually thinking about the professional side of gaming, whether that be esports or content creation. And I mean, just by y'all explaining your stories, there's so much going in. There's just all these dynamics that are included from just having time to play the game, to keeping up with what's the meta of the game, to, you know, who's your competition, where are you as far as the business is concerned, and like, how are you growing your brand? So I guess where we should start is, if someone has the mindset that they want to take professional gaming or esports, as we call it, seriously, where should they start? Where is it? What's the process of getting their business together so that they can they can you know, find success in the industry.
I think conceptually you have to figure out, in terms of where you want to be in esports, do you want to, are you trying to start a team or an organization, or are you trying to be a player or a streamer? And you know, there are some people in esports history that have done both, but rarely have they done both at the same time. No matter who you look at that owns a team now or that's played before, that's the big dynamic. And so whenever we started the Law of Esports, we really wanted to bring that in, you know, informational form, in a podcast form, of having me. So I work at a law firm that we hardly ever represent individuals. It's always leagues or teams or, you know, a tournament organization, something like that. And then Neffy is on the other end, where he's helped numerous streamers, players get through certain sticky legal issues. And so I think if you're looking at starting out, that's the dynamic that we decided on was really important. So if you're trying to start a team, then obviously you have talent to consider, you have your market to consider, and then nowadays you have your games to consider. What space are you entering, and how fulfilled is that space already? So if someone comes to me and they say, hey, I want to set up this league or this team, and we want to move into the Overwatch space, the reality is, the way that that league is structured, you can't really squeeze a new team in there. You're going to have to be on the AM circuit. And even if you are, you're probably not going to be able to go to many LAN tournaments and have the function of really building that business, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're in an esport that's not quite as structured, so for instance, if someone came, you know, a year or two ago and said they wanted to enter the Valorant space, awesome. If you have a following to do that with a brand and you can enter the Valorant space, it's kind of wide open, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of where you start, you really have to make that decision on, is it a team league org, or is it a player, streamer, personality? And Neffing can probably speak to some of the considerations you have to make whenever you're entering the sport as a prospective player.
And I don't think I could have said it any better myself, that and I think Jake also was going to say what I was going to start off with, was that understanding the dynamic. I think the reason why Jake and I work together as a team is because we have both ends of the spectrum as far as perspective and expertise, right? My practice, I primarily focus on individuals and helping people, not just with legal issues, but also answer questions like the one that you're asking us, Trent, which is, you know, okay, I want to become a professional gamer, right? But it's very easy to say that. But like Jake said, you have to figure out what you want to do. Do you want to be a professional gamer, right? Because you have to dedicate your time in a different way. And you have to market yourself differently depending on what you want to do. I want to be a professional gamer. Okay, if that's what you want to do, then the path and the information we're going to give you is going to be completely different versus somebody that says, hey, I want to create a brand. I want to be what they call, and I've represented both professional gamers and people that we call, what's the word I'm looking for, that content creators, right? All they do is, like I've got a guy that I helped recently that joined a very large organization, not as a professional gamer, right? What they're known for is professional gaming. I don't want to get into the specifics because there's certain confidentiality, but a very large gaming organization, and he doesn't play video games. He talks about the content. He talks a lot about Warzone, sort of the engineering behind the game, and creates TikToks and content creation for the team. And that's what he wants to do. He doesn't want to play. He likes playing competitively, and he streams sometimes, but his primary focus is on a very unique type of content creation. And he is now a member of one of these big organizations, but not as a professional gamer, like a competitive gamer, but rather as a content creator. And so, because the business model is essentially going to be the same, but the way that you handle about growing it is going to be very different, because you know, for example, a lot of these guys that are playing professional CSGO, professional Valorant, Call of Duty, whatever, they focus on practicing and playing and competing and not so much streaming, right? You're not going to see them on Twitch all the time. And oftentimes, because whatever league they're a member of, they're restricted as to what games they can play, when they can play, and whether or not they can stream it. And so, you know, and you have to consider that if you want to be a content creator, but also be a competitive gamer, that, hey, if you're going to go into the competitive gaming, you understand that you're not going to have the same freedoms as somebody that's streaming. And a good example is would be like Shroud. Back when he played for Cloud9, the reason why he retired a couple of years ago, you know, he played CSGO for years. He was one of the best, and I think arguably one of the best CSGO players of all time. But he had to make the decision. Do I continue playing competitive gaming, or do I step away and become a full-time streamer? And it's really difficult to do both because they each individually have unique requirements and time commitments that you have to consider whenever you're choosing one or the other. And so we're going to give you the typical lawyer answer, Trent. It depends.
It depends
on what kind of content creator, what kind of streamer, what kind of gamer they want to be, right? What do they want their brand to represent?
Yeah. And I think even you know, the legal aspect of how you approach it is it's so hard to be like a player coach. I think you have in-game leaders that do an effective job. So if you get the IGL tag, I think some guys do really well with that. But in terms of being a player / team owner, that is almost impossible. And a lot of times when guys try to do that, they're kind of forced into it and they aren't really aware of all the pitfalls. And one of the best examples, I think, of a person that was kind of a team owner / player was in Black Ops 4 back in 2019. Spacely, Call of Duty Pro, ended up getting dropped and formed a team that did really well. They're in the pro qualifier and you have like Optic, Luminosity, and then you have Team Spacely, right? They end up qualifying for the pro league, get acquired by Gen G Esports, and then Spacely gets dropped. And so the guy who like built the team that got them in the pro league didn't build the right structure to where he can maintain a hand in the team and ends up getting dropped out of it, which is a huge bummer. And you would hope that if someone's structuring a team and structuring their brand, that if they're playing and running a team, they can try and do both without getting cut out or something that happened that sucks. But, you know, I just think of that. I remember watching Team Spacely. I was like, this is awesome. And then now it's Gen G Esports, and now Spacely's gone. And I was like, damn, what a 180 for that guy, you know? And so, and
there's didn't a get lot the right of advice. Considerations.
Yeah, there's a lot of different considerations that go into it. But I think it's super important to try and understand what side of the competition you fall on.
Man, this podcast could be like 3 hours long, just like dissecting these things, because there's so many things to dissect. And, you know, here's a question I feel like it'll take up the rest of this podcast, I think, is the difference between someone who's on the grind and someone who just went viral, right? So you when I started in this space, whether it's any business, like working at McDonald's I never worked at McDonald's, so I don't know why I said that, but you know, working, you know, a traditional 9-to-5 or being a contractor or, you know, whatever your occupation is, I had traditional banking, right? A lot of these content creators don't have that because they monetize directly off of donations and tips, you know, and so they built built up their portfolio of gameplay without being banked. So I came from a different, you know, a different generation where my parents got me into, you know, getting my first banking account, and then I had this bucket to take these things, whereas I'm seeing people who go viral who don't have these buckets to accept those partnerships. And maybe they are surrounded by good mentors who give them the advice, or they, you know, sign with legal counsel like yourselves who can kind of put them in the right direction. But, you know, on the flip side of people who actually get that viral fame off the top, on the grinding side of it, you mentioned so many things about how do you balance your time between streaming, content creation, gameplay, entering tournaments, and I feel this question is going all over the place, but you know, I think ultimately we're in the business to create a lifestyle off of our love and passion for playing video games. But you know, that first opportunity, that first contract, someone may not have the system built to then, to take it to the next level. So, you know, what's the value of having someone like what yourselves involved? I know you mentioned that, you know, it's not a lot of people who just hit the ground running as independent contractors to creating an LLC and owning their own esports org. But, you know, what is that? Okay. So the sponsorship opportunities right in front of you, what is it that they need to do first? What's the first thing they need to think about when taking either that partnership contract at Twitch or that partnership with G Fuel or whatever the big name sponsor is? What's that first thing they need to think about?
So that's actually a very good question. And that particular question is the reason why Jake and I started our podcast. Mm-hmm. Our goal is not to cater and provide information necessary to people that are already established. It's to provide the basic knowledge and understanding of, because there's a huge threshold into the esports industry. To live the lifestyle of somebody that can afford to play video games all day and stream, and you're basically solely related. If you don't have any sponsorships, which they're not common, if you don't have any sponsorship, you're relying on solely donations of your viewers and any other sort of side jobs that you may have. We try and we strive to provide information for somebody that maybe right now isn't viral or isn't big, but to have a basic understanding of what you should know and what you should do now to prepare for the time whenever you do blow up or go viral or whatever. If you, and I don't mean to plug our podcast so bluntly, but if you go listen to like our first episode, right? And I want to apologize on the record as to the quality of the audio. We're mixing and doing everything ourselves. I'm going to be honest. I usually have IT team that does all this stuff for me in my law firm. At home, I'm doing it all myself. And so the audio isn't the best, but the first episode we talk about swatting, right? But the overarching theme of that particular episode is not necessarily swatting, but setting up and protecting your privacy, right? There's a lot of these guys, and I've heard of some of these guys that will go viral overnight. They'll have some crazy clip that'll get, you know how a lot of these big streamers like Shroud, XQC, all these guys, they will go back and they'll watch other streamers. And then if for some reason somebody does something crazy, they blow up, but they don't have the infrastructure set up to kind of continue with that momentum. And I'm taking the whole complete of what you need to do to keep the momentum up, but just the legal aspect of it. You know, you want to be able to, one, make sure that you're protected, because a lot of these guys, one, they don't have an LLC, right? And so if you don't have an LLC set up and you're streaming and for some reason you have 100,000, and maybe not that big, you have 10,000 viewers that will drop into your stream one time and start donating a bunch of money. Now you're making a significant enough portion of money to where you want to think about the tax consequences, right? You want to think about the liabilities you have of, you know, what you say and what you do on your stream, because as you continue to grow, there's a lot of liabilities that people don't think about that sort of you begin as you continue to grow and you get a bigger audience. And there's a lot of legal repercussions to what you say, what you do, you know, the kind of music you play on your stream, you know, the stuff that you're showing, and you know, we're trying to sort of create a foundation for those people to be able to be prepared if that ever comes to it. But at the end of the day, right, if you're brand new, to sort of answer your question in a more direct manner, if you're new, right, and you're looking into starting your stream, one of the first things is to make sure that you make a realistic analysis as to, okay, will I actually make money doing this, right? How dedicated will I be to it? It's like starting a new business, right? Whenever you're opening up a new restaurant, you need to go through a lot of legal steps before you do. You have to create an LLC. You have to make sure you have a business account set up with whatever bank. You have to make sure that you have somebody that you can go to that can advise you on your tax questions, right? Because if you have an accountant, or if you have a business account, you have to make sure that you have an accountant to help you kind of handle that money. And it's happened a lot lately, especially with a lot of these streamers blowing up, that, you know, money comes in, it's not pre-taxed. And then at the end of the year, when it's time to record your taxes, you owe, you know, $30,000 in taxes. And if you're blowing all your money or you're paying it for whatever, guess what? You're now dealing with the IRS. And it's something that you probably never anticipated that you were going to deal with at the beginning of your career. And somewhere along that first year, you blow up and now you have all these new issues that you never had. it's you want to treat it that way to where if you honestly think, right, because it's a business investment, if you honestly think that it's going to pick up and blow up, you have to prepare yourself for whatever may happen, right? You have to prepare for best case scenario, which is, okay, I'll blow up. I'm going to get 1,000 followers. I'm going to get 1,000 subs, right? That's $5,000 a month I'm getting now.
If that's your ambition, if that's what you want to have happen, you got to prepare for it. And so it's like Neffy said, if you're starting a restaurant, you know, you have different concerns if you're starting a lemonade stand versus like a 5-star steakhouse. You know, like if you're going to stream, you just want to stream for fun and you're out there and you want to get on Twitch or whatever, on Facebook and stream, and you're going to have 2, 3, 4, 5 viewers, whatever. And that's all you really want. You're not going to stream consistently. You're not going to create a brand. You're not going to do all these things that you would really need to do to succeed. Then you have different concerns than someone that, you know, goes through the time of creating a logo, takes the time to stream consistently, reaches out to other streamers, tries to squad stream sometimes. You have many different concerns than if you're someone that just wants to stream casually every now and then. And even then, you know, in our swatting episode, our first episode, we talk about organizing yourself as a business. And if you listen to some of these professional esports players, they will say, you know, I'm a business versus I'm like a player. And that's true to an extent, but it's not absolute. And what I mean by that is, if I'm a team and I'm signing you, I can't sign an LLC to play for me, right? I have to sign you as a person. But if you're going to go out and get sponsorships outside of that, or endorsements outside of that, like a lot of esports players do, like a lot of traditional athletes do, then you need to have a business organization set up to be able to handle those outside endorsements, sponsorships, et cetera, partnerships, besides just the team you're playing for. And that's a big difference in if you're going to be a professional esports player versus a streamer personality type person, right? So for instance, and I talk a lot about Call of Duty because I'm just a huge fan, but when Tommy left, you know, the Royal Ravens, and then became a full-time streamer, now he has much different concerns. He's not signing with the team in his personal capacity. He is now a business, right? And so if you're just starting out, understand, if you want to be a professional esports player, that may not mean streaming all the time, but it means competing all the time and streaming a lot. If you want to be a streamer or personality, well, as soon as you start getting those partnerships and endorsement offers, you want to be set up on the business side of things to be able to take full advantage of those. And then that's kind of a big difference, right?
So, you know, you guys are helping me clarify even my business model and what I talk about, because I always talk about getting started as the first thing is mindset. And I think we talked about that initially. But now what you're opening my eyes to a little bit, and I guess I knew this, but I didn't really have like the second step, is perspective. Because it really does matter where you're at. If you're someone who's just hit it viral, your filter bubble and what you're experiencing may not even provide you the opportunity or the information that's getting into your ecosystem may not be like, you need to take this seriously. You need to like be very hands-on in your business. It might be that, you know, there's just all this money coming in, and then that triggers the IRS or whoever, you know, wherever it is, to say like, we need to look at this guy, and he doesn't have his paperwork involved. He doesn't know, like, if he does this with his money, that it might cause this to happen, or if he does that with this money, it might cause this to happen, or to be just proactive in trying to do good business. And in this space, especially now with like the current meta of Twitch and how, and this might go into more of a perspective of the person who's wanting to start to get a team or a tournament organizer, that this industry is highly based off, at least on the amateur side, not necessarily the structured franchise professional side, is based off of wagering and gambling and creating content that gets circulated in in a meme or like this aspect of not necessarily controlling the IP of the content you create. So how to, like, from your perspective, Jake, because you're talking about, you mentioned that you look at it more of like a corporation standpoint, you represent teams, you represent organizers and brands in the space. That's a collective of people. Like, have you seen people who, I mean, obviously we can mention names, but we won't, of organizations that didn't take it from the right angle or didn't have the right intentions when they started their organization?
Absolutely. And I think part of that, and we've definitely seen it, I'm not going to name names of some of the teams that started and failed for whatever reason, but they do exist, they have existed, they will exist in the future. A function of that really is the age of the space. It's a very young space, right? And, you know, it would not be uncommon today, but it's especially not uncommon, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, to have a team owner that's 24, 25 years old, may or may not have any college experience, has a lot of gaming experience, but doesn't really know how to run the team that they're on. And before you know it, they're out there, they're not setting up their tax liability very well. They are making threats to other teams and, you know, making demands of players and teams that don't make any sense. It can actually trigger certain civil liabilities. And so when it comes to organizing a team or creating an organization or even a tournament hosting service, if you don't have the considerations of, okay, if I sign a person, what's the worst thing that can happen? And a lot of people think, you know, either that person sucks at the game or they make your team look bad for a different reason. They threaten another player or do something stupid on stream. Some teams consider player mobility a little bit of players moving around teams and the issues that can cause. But there's not a real consideration of, okay, I have a team or I have a league. How do I protect my players from outside influences, from other teams? How do I protect, or how do I get my league or my team exposure? And those are two considerations that, you know, a lot of people think of only in terms of the Twitter sphere and the Twitch sphere, and not so much, you know, am I doing things right by the federal government? If I get investors to contribute to the team, am I abiding by all of the SEC regulations that are required in that? Because if you want to raise money, there's certainly ways to do that besides Twitch donations, but you have to be cognizant of the problems you can have with investments in a new company, which is really what a team or organization is. And so from a team perspective, what can go wrong? Essentially a lot of things. And it's not just with signing the right talent, but if you're raising money, if you are partnering with a tournament organization service, which, and they're out there and they'll organize your tournaments for you. And they're really popular kind of in the college esports scene, where you have tournament organizers that will give you a platform and host your tournament, run your bracket, broadcast, and do all those things for you. But if you're going to partner with them, just make sure you understand the nature of the exposure you're getting and the amount of money that you're spending to get that exposure. At the same time, when it comes to regulatory issues, there's not a ton, but they exist. And that includes tax, that includes investment problems, and that includes labor and employment concerns with your players. And so, you know, it's hard. I don't want it to sound like starting a team is like drinking water through a fire hose, because these things, if you have someone giving you advice and knows what they're doing, you can break it down pretty simply. Like, for instance, you know, when it comes to a team organization, the tax liability is not that hard to figure out. It exists. You have to be aware of it. Investment regulations, not that hard to figure out. They exist. You have to be aware of it. And labor and employment concerns, which are concerns, but it's not, you know, a barrier to entry for anyone necessarily. The only negative thing I will say about getting into the space from a team or organization perspective is that there's probably going to be more upfront investment of money and time than getting into the space as like a player, at least on day one, right? On day one, if you want to be a strong esports player, you get a basic streaming setup, you start playing the game, and you have to invest a lot of time, but you don't really have to invest a ton of money, right? It's kind of the opposite from starting a team perspective. If you have a lot of money from the get-go, then you can build a pretty strong team in not a lot of time. And that's just a consideration that people have to understand. So even though the esports space is young, a lot of times where it goes wrong is people not considering the future. And some of that comes with people and owners being younger. But in general, it's not that hard. You just have to be aware of some of the concerns. And that's another thing that we try and talk about, you know, on our weekly deal. But yeah.
If I may add something, though, and what a lot of people don't know, and what Jake is saying is right, a lot of these owners, these team owners, are young guys. I mean, look at who owns 100 Thieves. Look at who owns FaZe. I think Optic is probably one of the more established guys, because Hex, no diss to him, he's one of the older, more seasoned guys that owns one of these teams. But what a lot of people don't know, and because they're usually in out in the shadows, not in a bad way, but they're outside the limelight, are people like us, like Jake and myself, that are professionals, attorneys. But more importantly, and you'll learn this if you know anything about 100 Thieves, is whenever 100 Thieves started, a lot of these other organizations, they have these mentors, right? People that will help them, guide them through all these extremely complicated aspects of not just owning a team, but starting a team, getting it off the feet, getting it off the floor, that people don't know about. I mean, I guarantee you, Nate Shot didn't start 100 Thieves by himself. He had the help of 2-3 guys that are a lot older and a lot smarter. Not saying that he's not smart, but the people that are aware of the ins and outs of this kind of space to help them walk through that process. And so people think, well, if Nate Shot, he's young, he could do it. I could do it too. I'm not saying that's not the case, but the difference is, and people don't know it, is that there was people that were backing him that are absolutely necessary and fundamental in order to be able to run, to start and run a successful team. And growing it to the, I mean, 100 Thieves and Optic, all these guys are massive. It took a lot of people, a lot of heads. You don't hear about those people, but I can assure you and I can tell you they are there. And so, you know, just so it doesn't, a lot of people think, oh, streaming and starting a team is easy. It's a little more complicated than that. And I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man, that's a lot to unpack. because we're all – us three are some Texas boys, you know, I can relate it to traditional sports and football and stuff. I played sports as well. And I just think of a lot of these influencers and people who have influence or influential in the space. I constantly hear how they're just gamers. They're just gamers. They call them just gamers, which means that they don't really have life experience outside of being a gamer. So when I hear you guys talk, I think, oh, there's so much perspective, and this is going to definitely geo-lock us in being an All-American, both having your offense and your defense and being able to play on both sides of the ball. But then I think, okay, so if you're on the offense, you can go wrong in being on the offense. But from the offensive perspective, thinking of how many different ways the defense is trying to stop you from succeeding, whether it be, you know, a legal play or an illegal play on what shouldn't happen, whether it be your family, your friends, the regulation bodies, the police, the IRS, whatever it is, because they see the success and they want to take advantage of what opportunities you've built for yourself. And it's not a clean game. It's not on whether you want to say you're on the right or the wrong. Everybody's trying to build a lifestyle and financial stability for themselves. So if you become a target in some way, because whether that be, you mentioned 100 Thieves and the venture capitalism that they've taken in, or even, you know, associating yourselves with international investors or whatever it may be that causes this sort of red flags from anyone across the board of those different categories that I was mentioning. Just, it's a lot to take in as an individual. And in this space, it is a lot of individuals graduating to becoming org owners.
It is, man. Like, but the thing, well, I think the thing
let me finish this real quick. And what is different from traditional media is that there's a lot of legacy in those other areas. That in this space, there isn't any legacy.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think one of the things that we've talked about over and over again, because it's omnipresent across every esports org, every esports team, it's a consideration for every player, is that the main difference between traditional sports and esports, especially from a business and legal perspective, is you have the team, you have the league, you have the players, but then you also have the publisher throwing in an added wrinkle. Right. And that creates a wholly different consideration whenever you're looking at player behavior or, you know, your goals in the space. That just creates a complete difference. And so I think one advantage, I think being young in the space can be a disadvantage in a lot of ways. One massive advantage is that they are coming up in a world where they are dealing with this added dynamic of a publisher that controls the base level of the game that they compete on, that you just don't have in traditional sports. Like, no one owns the game of football. No one owns the game of hockey. No one owns the game of soccer. Leagues can start and they can play it without a copyright infringement from another league, you know, as long as their branding's fine, whatever. But I do think that you will see a new era of young professional people with esports experience that understand that dynamic really well. And I think the more you see that, the more these concerns will be addressed in a more effective way. And one of the reasons why we started the Law of Esports podcast is because we wanted to give people, both the professionals and amateurs alike, I mean, legal professionals, people that look at esports and say, okay, it's just traditional sports online, essentially. That's not the case. It is a completely new space with completely new concerns, one of which is the fact that if you're playing a game, someone else owns that. And you can't just go, you know, start a new game. There's a whole publishing process out there. And we've talked about it multiple times where the publisher can change the game right before a tournament. They can issue their own punishments sometimes to people that break certain game rules. It's wild the amount of impact that one little difference has. And that just impacts everything across the board.
Yeah. And, you know, I hate to do this, but we're coming up on the closeout of this podcast, and we'll have to have you back on the show again. And in a very short time frame, hopefully as soon as possible. But no, I appreciate you guys coming on the show. I hope that the listeners got the most value, that they got a lot of value, I should say, out of this podcast, because it is incredibly valuable to me, of course, for you guys to be on the show. So I want to give you guys the opportunity to promote your podcast and how people can get connected with you and get more information.
Yeah, so I appreciate that, Trent. It's great talking to you today. I know a lot of the information we talk about is kind of hard to cater it to a broad audience, because usually there's very specific amount of people that are very specific people looking for very specific information. But one of the things is, and I want everybody to know, all the listeners, is that we try to be as accessible as possible. Okay. Regardless of how big we get, we're going to try to help as many people as we can with the information we provide. I know Jake and I are open and willing to answer any questions. If you guys have questions or want topics for us to talk about, you know, one of the tricky parts about content creation is coming up with topics. And I'm sure you know this as you're heading this podcast, that we have plenty of things to talk about, but we want to provide something that listeners want to listen to and help them with the current issues that they're facing, right? Like, we're inevitably going to talk about contracts, which is going to be a big episode. We just recorded an episode regarding unionizing in teams, which is sort of a hot topic right now in esports. We talked about cheating, and we're going to continue to develop our topics as esports evolves. And I mean, we have a Twitter, right? You can go follow us at the Law of Esports Podcast Twitter. I think our Twitter is at the Law of Esports, and shoot us a message. I mean, we have an open DM system. I've literally had 3 to 4 guys DM me directly with questions, and we're more than happy. Of course, you know, this may not always be the case, but one of the benefits of coming in while we're young and asking questions is that I answer these guys' questions for free. I don't charge them. Normally, you know, we'll have a retainer, we'll charge a billable hour. That's usually how we conduct our business. But for people that are listeners, fans of not just our podcast, but also your podcast, they can reach out to us, right? On our Twitter, our individual Twitters are also available, and our DMs are always open. If I don't answer, Jake will answer. I almost always answer, but if Jake doesn't answer, you guys can message me or message our podcast. We have access to it. And, you know, our goal is just to give people in the space the knowledge and information that is not so readily available because it's so new. And, you know, lawyers, being a lawyer is a business, right? They're going to find out ways to make money. And our goal with this is not necessarily to make money, but to help both new guys and growing guys and people that are up there that recently blew up and have no idea how to handle it. They don't know who to reach out to. We want people to know that we can be a good source of information for them and help them without any commitment. Just because I think if we allow them to grow, that makes the space better. And that's ultimately our goal is to help these guys, whether it's organizations, league organizers, you know, streamers, players, whatever it is, we want to provide information.
Yeah, well said. Law of Esports podcast, super awesome. Check out episode 5 on players unions. I think it's fascinating. If you want to know how players unions and players associations work, if you ever heard that term, we define that. And episode 4, we talked about ESIC, the Esports Integrity Commission. We just like to point these things out, talk about them, and in a short time frame of between 30 and 50 minutes, you know, check it out on your drive home. And if you have ideas, questions, DM us.
Yeah, let us know.
Again, thank you for coming to the show. This has been Jake Hicks and Nephi Lopez of the Law of Esports. Once again, the Esports Business Network. Thank you for listening. Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.